Morning. Today's daf and chulin's pei zayin. We are in the Mishnah and pei vavam and beis. Still in the sixth parak of the Masechta, discussing the mitzvah of kisui hadam. The Mishnah starts off shachat meyach chayos b'makom echad leishecht 100 chayos in one area. Kisui ech lekulan. You only have to do one kisui at the end, and this satisfies the obligation of kisui for all the animals. Meyach ofus b'makom echad. Similarly, if you were to shecht 100 birds in one area, kisui ech lekulan. Once again, you could just simply postpone the kisui to the end and accomplish the mitzvah by covering it all at the end. Chayav ha'of b'makom echad. Now, if you're shechting chayav ha'of in one place, kisui ech lekulan there too. It's one kisui at the end for both. Rabbi Yehuda omer shechachai yichasen v'achakach yishchot es ha'of. Rabbi Yehuda says that when you shecht the first, a proper protocol when you're shechting chayav in birds is that you have to separate the kisuyim. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you shecht the animal first, and then your mechasa, and afterwards you shecht the bird, and then your mechasa. Now, seemingly, the simple pshat in the Mishnah is that Rav Yehuda agrees with the basic premise of the Tanakhama, that by shechting 100 animals, you only need to do one shechita for all 100 at the end. And the same thing is true if you shecht 100 birds together. It seemingly, the simple reading of the Mishnah would be that Rav Yehuda only requires segregation and separation only when you're shechting chaya ve'ofos. Now, it could very well be that it's simply predicated on the pasuk. The pasuk says, chaya o'of. That when a person goes ahead and shechts either a chaya or a bird. And it could be that the word over there, over there is for the purpose of separation. That could be. The Gemara is quite frankly not going to discuss it so extensively. Tana Rabbanan, we're going to have a series of braces over here discussing these halachas of kisui. Chaya kol mashma chaya b'meruba b'muatis. When the Torah says the word chaya is both in the singular and in the plural. Meaning from a Torah standpoint, linguistically from the Torah standpoint. When the Torah says chaya, it doesn't necessarily mean singular one. Chaya implies all animals, or it could even be some animals. Of kol mashma, of bein meruba, bein muat, same thing with the word of. Mikan amru shacha meyachah is b'makom echad, kisui echad lekulan. Meyof is b'makom echad, kisui echad lekulan. So, and if I were to shecht 100 animals, that falls under the category of chaya. If I were to shecht 100 birds, that would fall under the category of of. And the same thing is true if I shechted chaya and of, when I only have to do one kisui at the end. Rabbi Huda Amr Shachar Chaya Chasim Vachakach Yishchot Azov Shenemar Chaya O of. And Rabbi Huda over here darshens the pasuk. Now, as I pointed out in the Mishnah, it seemingly is from the extra O separating the two between chaya and of. And therefore, if you're shechting chaya and of, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, so the kisui has to be done individually. First cover the chayos, then cover that of the oaf. Amalo harei omer ki nefesh kol basar dama b'nafshohu. Now the response of the Chachamim back to Rabbi Yehuda is the Torah in the very same location in Achremo says, ki nefesh kol basar dama b'nafshohu. We're talking about blood. So once we're talking about blood, so everything is equalized. Meaning, yes, this blood may be coming from a bird, and this blood may be coming from a chaya, but when all said and done, it's blood, and it needs to be covered, and there does not have to be a separation. So, Maika Mahajule. So, now the Gemara at first doesn't fully understand the response of the Chachamim to Rabbi Yehuda. So, Hachi Kamrile, Rabbanan. Hai O mi baile lechalik. The O over here is coming to divide, meaning, the Chachamim says to Rabbi Yehuda, do you know why the Torah inserts the word O over there? For purposes of division, meaning that without the word O, we would have entertained the idea that the only time that there's a mitzvah of kisui is when I shecht the chaya and an oaf. And so what the O is coming to tell me is that, no, the mitzvah of kisui applies even if I shecht one or the other. Rabbi Yehuda l'chalik midamo nafka. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, I agree with that point. But we knew that based on another pasuk, which is damo, its blood, not their blood. V'rabbanan damo tuva mashma. Dechsiv ki nefesh kol basar dama b'nafshohu. Al. Now we understand how this is a response of the Chachamim to Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning if you're resting your entire case and argument on the word damo, damo in English can translate as its blood, or it could also translate as their blood. Damo is just simply possessive, but it does not indicate whether it's singular or plural. And so therefore, if your entire argument is damo, that is an insufficient argument. Therefore, we need the word o to separate chaya and of. So here we are basically grounded in the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, how to understand the word damo. According to Rav Yehuda, it means its blood, which I already know means that we've separated the chaya and the oaf. And then the word oh, according to Rav Yehuda, is coming to tell me that when I do the mitzvah of kisui, I have to do it separately. Chayas have their kisui, ofos have their kisui. Masha'inki, the chachamim disagree for the reasons that we just articulated. Really, really interesting, by the way, over here. We just had it in the Gemara a couple days ago, right? The machlokes between Rav Yoshi and Rav Yonasan, whether we assume conjoined or do we assume that they're not joined unless the Torah says yachtav. And so over here, the Gemara does not mention the machlokes between Rav Yoshi and Rav Yonasan, where seemingly this is like the perfect place to mention that debate. Good. I asked the question. I don't have an answer. Let's go on.
Rabbi,
yeah.
What happens if he says off first and then higher? Would he say the same?
I don't
know. That's just higher
Okay, I hear. I don't know. I'm Rabbi Chanina Modahaya Rabbi Yehuda Le'inyan Bracha Sheinu Mevarech. Ella Bracha Achas. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we have a requirement to separate. If I'm going to be shechting Chaya V'Ofos, so we first have to shech the Chayas, then do Kisu in the Chaya, and then we're going to have to turn to Ofos and do Kisu on the Ofos. The way I'm about to present the Gemara right now is all going to be according to Rashi. And by the way, Tosos is fully on board with Rashi. So we have a, on the daf, we have Rashi and Tosos both advancing the pshat which I'm about to offer. So that means now that according to Rav Yehuda, here's the sequence of events. Follow. We're going to make a bracha on shechita on the chayos. We're going to shech the chayos. We're going to do kisu on the chayos. We're now going to turn to the ofos. We're going to make a bracha on the ofos. Now, generally speaking, whenever we are about to shech multiple animals, we make one bracha on the front end. We make one bracha on the front end, and then we shecht. And a number of animals that we plan on shechting, we're just going to continuously shecht. There is a discussion, it's actually coming up in Tosfos on today's daf, in terms of what if the shochet, what if he had an interruption, a hesech, what if he spoke between any one of the animals, does that constitute an interruption? But let's just right now start with a very basic point. That the general rule is that you make one bracha on the front end, and then you just continuously shecht the animals that you planned on shechting. But over here, however, according to Rav Yehuda, we have a little bit of an interruption. Because after you shecht all your chayos, you are now required, according to Rav Yehuda, to do kisui hadam, and then turn your attention to the birds. Is that kisui hadam now going to be considered an interruption? Now, by the way, there is a... Oh, hold on one second. I'm ahead of myself. Is that kisui hadam going to be an interruption? When I start now shechting the ofos, do I have to make a new birchas hashechita? And the Gemara now is going to tell us that, and again, I'm explaining the Gemara like Rashi, and the answer is going to be no. You're not going to have to make a new birchas hashechita. Give me a moment. Let's just spell out the sugya, and then afterwards, by all means. I'm Rabbi Chanina Modahaya Rabbi Yehuda Le'inyan Bircha She'inu Mevarech Ela Bracha Achas. So you're only making one bracha. And the Gemara's focus over here is on, according to Rashi, is on the bracha of shechita. Meaning, even though according to Rav Yehuda, you are going to stop and do kisui hadam, that birchas shechita that you made in the front end is going to cover everything. It's going to cover both the chayos, and it's going to cover the ofos as well. And kisui is not viewed as an actual interruption. Now, one thing, as I present the Gemara, and I'm presenting it like Rashi, is that it's interesting, what about the bracha of kisui hadam? Meaning, when we do the mitzvah of kisui, presumably we're going to make a bracha. Now, for those of you who are at my shir this week, so you know, it's a machlokas in the Rishonim, whether the bracha of kisui hadam should be going before you do the kisui or after you do the kisui. Okay, so that's a machlokas in the Rishonim, and that's not for now. But it's interesting, though, because really, according to Rashi, the entire focus of the Gemara over here is just simply on the bracha of shechita, not on the bracha of kisui. Okay. Now, on this, the Gemara now is bothered for the following reason. We now have a situation where I'm shechting, but I'm going to take a break to do kisui, and I'm going to resume shechting, and that break that I've just taken is not an interruption. On that, the Gemara says, I'll tell you why that's difficult, based on the following. Now, I don't understand how it's any different than the students of Rav. Now, the students of Rav is a story that's told a couple times in Shas, here being one of them, and the story goes like this. Rav Bruno of Rav Chanano Tamid de Rav, Havayasa Bisudasa, So two students of Rav were sitting at a meal. Kayala Rav Yeba Saba. And Rav Yeba Saba is there attending them. He's a shamash. Yeah, it's a little strange. You have one Talmid Chacham serving a pair of other Talmid Chachamim, but okay, that was the story. So Amrule Hav Livrech. So he's offering them now a cup of wine, and they first look at the cup of wine, and they say, you know what? That'll be our benching cup. Right? Back in the day, people benched over a cup of wine. Now, I say back in the day, the halacha is that you bench over a cup of wine. Yes, there's a debate in terms of how many people are there necessary in order to bench over a cup of wine. Some say 10, some say 3, some even say 1. Whatever the case was, clearly back in the day, they benched over a cup of wine. So the attendant came along with a cup of wine, and they said to themselves, you know what? We're good. We're done eating. That cup of wine is going to be for our benching. But then Hadar Amrle Havlishte. But then afterwards, they had a reconsideration. You know what? Even though we called the meal to an end, but we've reconsidered. That cup of wine, let's just simply enjoy each other's company a little bit longer. Let's stay in the meal. Amalahu Rav Yeba Saba. Now Rav Yeba Saba turns to the students of Rav and he says to them, Hachi Amar Rav. Well, do you know what your Rebbe said? Kevin da Amar Hav Livrech Itzer Leila Mishtech Hamra. Once you said the words Hav Livrech, you have signified it's the end of the meal, and now you can't drink any more wine. Hachanami, the Gemara says, just like over there, by an announcement that the meal has come to an end, and at that point in time now, that represents a Hesach Hadas, here too, when you're doing Kisui Hadam, doesn't that represent the end? Hachanami, Kevin de Itpale le Kisui, a Chayiv le Labracha. So at that point in time now, you should require new Bracha. So the Gemara's comparison over here is so interesting. The Gemara is now putting side by side the act of Kisui Adam as representing a Gemar Shechita, it's the end of Shechita. By the way, that language that I just said, that's Tosas' Lashon. That Kisui is the Gemar Shechita. It's the conclusion of Shechita. Just like when the cup of wine was presented to the students of Rav, they said, Hav Nivrech. Oh, okay, good. So let's bench over that cup of wine, meaning that declaration is now the end of the meal. And just like over there, if they now, too many thoughts going through my head at the same time. Just like over there, they are not allowed to drink that cup of wine because they have now signified the end of the meal. So too over here, you're not allowed to just simply go on and shecht because the kisui represents the end. Okay. Hachi hasha. Now, I'm going to come back to this point in just a moment, but first let's finish the thread of the Gemara. As we turn to the top of Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. Hachi hasha. Has the Mishnah of Ruchi Bahadeh Adadeh? Lo Efshar. Hacha Efshar Deshecha Bechada Mechase Bechada. Gemara makes a super interesting distinction between the two cases. You see, in the case of the benching and the students of Rav, so they said, let's bench. It's physically impossible to bench and continue eating at the same time. Benching, or in this case, the declaration that we plan on benching, is clearly mutually exclusive to continuing your meal because you can't bench and eat at the same time. However, Kisui Adam and Shechita, you get somebody who has a little bit of dexterity, a little bit of coordination, and can multitask, and it's no big deal. You shecht, let me just finish, you shecht with one hand, you cover with the other hand, and so therefore one is not necessarily a hesach upon the other, a hesach adas on the other. And so the Gemara says, since they can coexist, those two actions, one is not a separation for the other.
What about the kavanah for each mitzvah? Forget about the act. What if, can the guy have simultaneous kavanah to perform two mitzvahs simultaneously?
Generally, the answer to that is no. The Gemara in a couple of other places says that you have to have kavanah for one mitzvah at one time. And that's an excellent point.
No, but it's not related to the sugi folks Thursday? About
The relationship... Right, the relationship between the mitzvah shechita and the mitzvah of kisui. We spoke about it. Yep. I scratched the surface. I started the sugya. Anyway, there is a really interesting discussion. Tosfos on the bottom of the previous amud. I'll just bring it up over here. I'll mention it briefly. It's a lengthy discussion. Rav Yeba Saba said to the students of Rav, you know, you can't drink the wine because he said hav nivrech. Now, Tosfos on the bottom of the previous Amud says, now, even though the simple reading of Rav Yeva Saba is you can't drink the wine, He didn't literally mean that wine is off limits to you. It simply means you want to drink that cup of wine. Do you know what you need to do? You need to make a new bracha. You're not really totally banned and barred from drinking that cup of wine. It just simply means you can't drink it until you make a new bracha. Tosfos says, look, it certainly seems to be the correct shot, because consider the parallel that we just created. On one hand, we were discussing the shechita, kisui dam, and the question of resuming shechita and making a new bracha as you resume. Same thing over here, says Tosfos. We're talking about, you're in a meal, you declared you're going to bench, so if you want to resume your meal, you're going to have to make a new bracha. So Tosfos argues that even though the simplest reading of the Gemara is that you can't drink that wine, Tosfos says that's imprecise. It means that you can't drink the wine until you make a new bracha rishona. See the bottom Tosfos over there for a lengthy discussion. The Gemara also, in its distinction, said that if it's something that you cannot do simultaneously, it therefore constitutes the hefsek. So really interesting. Tosfos on the top of our Amud discusses the following. You're in the middle of the meal. Happens all the time, especially at weddings. You're in the middle of the meal, and you run out to daven mincha, you run out to daven maariv. You can't eat and daven at the same time. So just like the Gemara says that declaration of benching constitutes the end of the meal, and therefore you cannot resume the meal, and again, I'll add like Tosfos, until you make a new bracha. So if you're going to be davening in the middle of the meal, is that going to be considered a hafsek? Now, everyone here just simply knows what is casual behavior, common behavior. You don't make a new bracha, meaning you're davening in the middle of the meal, you just go back and you resume the meal. But why are you just simply going back and resuming the meal? You can't daven and eat at the same time.
That if some people are sitting at a table and continue the meal, then you don't have to...
That's a great memory. The beginning of the 10th parak over there in Pesachim regarding anchoring, right? You have somebody over there remaining as an anchor. Tosfos on the bottom of the previous Amud cites that Gemara as part of his discussion. Tosfos on the top of the Amud says that davening and eating are of course mutually exclusive, but Tosfos says, but the davening is not going to be serving as a hefsek. Because a declaration of benching is basically signaling we're done. But if you're davening, it just simply means you're davening because it's time to daven. But that doesn't necessarily signal the end of the meal. Tosfos, although, to be fair, some Rishonim say that davening does actually represent a hefsek in the middle of the meal, but Tosfos over here argues it does not.
They're saying that second bracha for new bracha for Priya Geffen. Is it presumed that they said a Priya Geffen already?
Well, of course,
because they say Amotzi is covered.
The no. In other words, they made a Bori Priya Geffen. The Gemara's assumption.
Yeah.
Wine was a staple as part of every meal.
Right.
Yeah. No, in other words, it would seem like proper procedure from that point going forward is that you should bench. And that wine, and that cup of wine that's brought is going to be used for benching.
Is that part of the reason why they said after Abdallah, after Soda Shalishi, you have the wine, but you don't say the bracha?
That's a little more complicated. Not necessarily, really. Okay. We are in the Mishnah. We're in Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. We start with the Mishnah, top of the Amud Shechav Elokisa V'Ro'acher Chayv L'Chasos. You shecht an animal, and as far as you're concerned, you feel your job is done. Now your job is not done, meaning we're talking about obviously here a chayer or an oaf. Your job is not done, but you walked away, and somebody else sees that there's blood on the floor and it went uncovered. Okay, so the other person now has an obligation to cover. Kisavin is gala pater melchasos. You cover the blood; the blood now becomes uncovered, wind or whatever. However, it becomes uncovered. Pater melchasos. The mitzvah of kisui adam is only a one-time need and requirement. You only need to cover the blood one time, and that's it. And even if subsequently it becomes uncovered, it doesn't matter. The mitzvah has been completed. Kisawa ru chayv l'chasos. Now, if the wind covers the blood, meaning you shechted the chay, shechted the bird, the blood went on the ground, and now along comes a strong gust and covers the blood. The Mishnah says, confusingly, chayv l'chasos. Now you have to cover it. And the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. Well, it's too late. It's covered. So stay tuned. We're gonna decipher that line of the Mishnah. We get to the end of this Amud. Tanu Rabbanan, we are starting the Gemara. V'shefach v'chisa, we're going to have three brises in succession, each one making related points. V'shefach v'chisa, misha shefach v'chasa. Who really has the principal obligation to do the mitzvah of kisui? The one who shechs. Shech v'lo kisa v'ro achra minayin shechayv l'chasos. What if that person who shechted just simply walked away and didn't do the kisui? How do I know that somebody else is now obligated and required to do the kisui? Because the Shenema, the Pasuk says, and this is the very next Pasuk after the Torah in Achrimos introduces us to the mitzvah of kisui Adam, the very next Pasuk reads, V'amar l'vnei Yisrael. You're going to speak to B'nai Yisrael, Azar l'chol B'nai Yisrael, meaning that this is not only a mitzvah on the shochet, but it's also on everyone else as well. So basically, if we could just try to unpackage this brisa, there basically are two steps to the mitzvah. Principally, the mitzvah is on the shochet, and then afterwards, if the shochet fails to do the mitzvah, so then the mitzvah devolves upon everybody else. I'll give you a wonderful example where we find this idea where there's a principal person obligated, and then the next step, if he fails, is we're going to move it on. This is off the top of my head. The Gemara in Kiddushin regarding the mitzvah of Bris Milah. The mitzvah of Bris Milah is principally on the father, and then for whatever reason, if the father fails to do so, so then the mitzvah falls on others. Falls on Beis Din, falls on Klal Yisrael. But in other words, but you see that there's a principal person that's involved, and then if he fails to do it, so then it moves on to others. Meaning what? Between oldest brother. Oh, and then the other brothers. Yeah. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah. Tan Yidach, the Gemara quotes another brisa. V'shafach v'chisa b'mesha shafach bo yichase. You know, the instrument you use to shecht, which I know is a knife, but it's your hand. That's what you do kisui with. Shelo yichase na berego. Because one would think, okay, kisui, now I gotta put my hands in the dirt. Like, what's it called? The dirt's on the floor, my foot's right there. I'll just kick the dirt over the blood. And the brisa says, don't do that. But in other words, and we say this now figuratively and literally, put your hands in the dirt. Shelo yehem mitzvahs bezuyas alav. Because this is a mitzvah opportunity. And you don't want to disgrace a mitzvah. So if you have a mitzvah opportunity, even though it includes dirt, and even though it includes putting your hand in the dirt, put your hand in the dirt. Tan Yidach v'gemar quotes the third brisa. V'shavach v'chisa. Misha shavach hu yichasenu. The person who shechs, he's the one who is going to be covering. Like we said previously, the principal obligation of kisui is on the shochet. I mentioned these brises are really related one to another. Ma'isa be'echa sheshachat v'karim chaver v'chisa. There was an incident once where somebody shechted, and then somebody cut the line, meaning the principal obligation of the kisui is on the shochet, and somebody just jumped right in and did the kisui. V'chaver Rami Gamliel itein lo yud zuhuvim, and Rami Gamliel says, oh boy. That's no good. And he required him to give 10 golden coins. I will talk equivalency in just a moment. Earlier this week, I didn't know. I did a little bit of research for today. I'll talk about how much that money translates into. So over here, it's so interesting. Rabbi Gamliel now imposes a fine upon somebody who comes in, steps in, and intercepts somebody else's mitzvah. Okay, so usually in our modern sports, you get rewarded for an interception. So here, a penalty for an interception. You're not allowed to take away somebody else's mitzvahs. So, and if you do, if somebody else has the principal opportunity and obligation to do the mitzvah, and you go and you intercept, so for being aggressive, so you penalize now 10 golden coins. Now, obviously, let's make the point as obvious as one can make it. There is no monetary value that we can attach to a mitzvah. The value of a mitzvah is olam haba, a chelik in olam haba. And that obviously does not constitute any kind of monetary value. However, over here is basically kind of like a kanas. We're trying to get people not to behave in such a manner. And so therefore, yudzehuvim, it's a slap on the wrist, so to say. And as we'll see in just a moment, when I get to the equivalencies, it's a pretty significant slap on the wrist. Ibailu schar mitzvah schar bracha. Interesting question, follow-up question of the Gemara. If the Yud Zehuvim penalty for intercepting somebody else's mitzvah, is that for taking away his mitzvah or the bracha on the mitzvah? Now, I understand that the question is so interesting because a bracha on the mitzvah is really important, but it's not the ikar. meaning the ikar, of course, is the mitzvah. So the Gemara over here is entertaining the idea, yeah, but you also took away his bracha, and that's also valuable. So what is the fine for? Is it for the bracha or for the mitzvah? Now, it's interesting because here's what the Gemara does not address. There are many mitzvahs out there that don't have brachas. So what if I take somebody's mitzvah away that doesn't have a bracha? Am I going to be fine for that? Now, I think the answer is yes, but the Gemara is not going in that direction. So I can only guess. But here's the direction the Gemara does go. Let's say you take away someone's mitzvah of benching. Now, how do you take away someone's mitzvah of benching? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to illustrate it very clearly. If I take somebody's mitzvah of benching away from him, so iyamar tzchar mitzvah achasi. Now, how many mitzvahs is benching? Benching is one mitzvah. How many brachas is benching? It's four brachas. Now, that number, by the way, is a little bit confusing because every single time the Gemara refers to benching, it calls it three brachas. But, of course, it's three plus one. Three brachas min haTorah, one bracha min derabanan. So, in total, it's four. So, now, are you going to get penalized for the mitzvah or for the brachas? Iyamar tzchar bracha havin arba'im. So now, if you're going to get penalized for the brachas that you took away, you took away somebody's benching, that's four brachas, four times ten, that's 40. So how much are you going to get penalized? And the Gemara is going to explain all this in a story. Now, in the story we're about to start together, we're going to learn a lot of things. First of all, how do you take away someone's benching? That's a simple question, but we're going to see that together. And when you get fined, do you get fined for the mitzvah or for the number of brachas? They also will become clear from the following story. Tashma da amrleya utzaduka le Rebbe. So here you have now a antagonistic exchange between a tzaduki and Rebbe. And of course, tzaduki is a sectarian group of Jews, started way back earlier, towards the beginning of Bais Sheni, but really it took hold. And tzadukim, baitusim, so these are sectarian groups of Jews who ignored and rejected the Torah Shabbat Peh, only stuck to Torah Shabbat Chsav. During the Second Temple, they assumed power positions of leadership and power. Kohanim came from the Tzaduki group. And over here, this particular Tzaduki is having dialogue with Rebbe. Rebbe's living after Chorban Bayis Sheni. So basically, we have hundreds of years of Tzadukim. And clearly, Rebbe, being a traditionalist, being a what we would call a from the Prushim, so he obviously abides by Torah Shabbat Chsav, Torah Shabbat Peh, and so the conversation is always going to turn antagonistic. And over here, it's not even about Torah Shabbat Peh, it's really about the essence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Mishi Yatzaharim Lo Baruch, Mishi Baruch Lo Yatzaharim Dechsev. So the Tzaduki now says, you know that there cannot be one creator; it's got to be two. Look at the pasuk in Amos: Ki Hine Yatzaharim Ubari Ruach. Pasuk in Amos, when you read it, sounds like there's someone who created the mountains and there's someone who created the wind. Now, you don't have to read the pasuk that way. In fact, Rebbe, of course, is not going to. But in other words, the Tzaduki is putting monotheism on trial. So Amar Lei, so Rebbe Yehuda Anasi says back to the Tzaduki, Shote, you fool, Shvil Sefer Dekra. Go to the end of the pasuk. Hashem Tzvakos Shemo. The end of the pasuk clearly says that this creator is not two, Chalila, it's one. Hashem Tzvako Shmo. So you can't challenge me from the beginning of that pasuk in Amos. You just simply go to the end of the pasuk and you see that it's one. So I don't know what you are gaining from that particular pasuk. Amalei nekot li zimna talsi yom umadrin alach. Tiyufte. So the Tzaduki says to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, that's an excellent point. I want 3 days to think about it. I'm coming back with an answer and a response. Yosef Rabbi talas tanisa. For those 3 days, Rebbe fasted. Rebbe, even though, as right as he was, as correct as he was, but he didn't want to hear any kind of argument and retort back from the Tzaduki, and so he asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu for Siyata Deshmaya, and in doing so, he really beseeched Hashem, and he did so in fasting. Ki hava kabaye, now argue says the word mivrach or mivra. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi wanted to heal himself, meaning 3 days fasting, he wanted to eat. But he also knew that the Tzaduki was coming and knocking at the door. Amar Lei Tzaduki Kaya Bava. And we are now on day three, and the Tzaduki's at the door. Now, I'm going to give away a little bit of the story. It's not clear in the Gemara, this little plot twist. Rashi says it will become clear in the Gemara in just coming up ahead. It's not the Tzaduki that he was arguing with. It was a different tzeduki. Amar v'yinu b'vrosi rosh. Now, at this point in time, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi didn't know that. And he basically said, v'yinu b'vrosi rosh, the pasuk in Tehillim describing how I'm feeling awful. Meaning, I'm feeling bitterness. Amar le Rebbe mevaser tovas anilach. Now, he opens the door. And again, I'm giving away a detail. It's not the same tzeduki, it's a different tzeduki. And he says, look, I came here to report good news for you, which is, lo matzah tshuva oivech v'nafa menagag omeis. The tzeduki that you were arguing with could not find an answer. So dejected, he went to the top of the roof and he killed himself. Amrlo ritzoncha shetaslo etzli. So, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, so happy to hear about the news, so he says to the second tzeduki, would you come and would you join me for a meal? Amrlo hein. And he said, yes. Now, achash achlu v'shasu, so they ate, they drank. Amrlo kosho bracha, atashosa arba'im zuhuvim ata notel. And now Rebbe says to the tzeduki as follows, look, you came in with good news and I fed you. But here's the real truth. I don't want to bench with you. Now, here's where it gets certainly very interesting. You know, back in the day, the way the halacha was originally intended for benching, one person would bench, everyone else would listen. Answer amen to the four brachas, and that's how benching worked once upon a time. When you were a guest in somebody's house, the principal obligation of benching falls on the guest, not on the host, for a very simple reason. Because included in benching, after the four brachas, is a harachaman that is going to be blessing the Baal HaBayis. So the way that benching initially, originally, fundamentally was instituted is that if you're a guest in somebody's house, you have the principal obligation to bench. So truth now is that this tzeduki really now has an obligation to bench, but Rebbe didn't want him to bench because he was a tzeduki. And although he fed him and although he gave him what to drink, but as far as benching is concerned, he didn't want to bench together with him. Now, it's not perfectly clear to me what he expected in terms of the tzeduki. To basically just leave the room beforehand and leave without benching, meaning it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. So that part, to me, gets a little bit cloudy, admittedly. But however, the idea is very simple over here. He basically is ready to pay the tzeduki for benching. Meaning if you take somebody's mitzvah, so you slap with a fine that we just learned. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, you know what? I'll pay the fine. If it means that you're not going to be benching with me, that's great. I'll pay the fine. So erbaim zehuvim atanotel. So, but he gave him a choice. He says, look, you either bench, which is your right to do, or I'll just simply pay you the money for taking away. And note, of course, how much was he ready to offer him? 40 zehuvim, which means that even though benching is one mitzvah, but it's one mitzvah made up of four brachos, and clearly Rebbe understood that the penalty is 10 zehuvim per bracha. Four brachos, 40 zehuvim. Am lo kosho bracha anishosem. So over here, the tzeduki makes makes quote unquote the right choice. He says, "I'm going to bench." Yatsa Basko v'amar kosho bracha yishva arba'im zehuvim. Basko comes out and says that the kosho bracha is equivalent to 40 zehuvim. The man gave up 40 zehuvim so that he could bench with Rebbe. Am Rav Yitzchak adain shana la'osa mishpacha ben gedolei romi. Rav Yitzchak, who is living now about two generations later, Rav Yitzchak, who was a Talmud of Rav Yochanan was a Talmud of Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, so he has now historical perspective. And he says, by the way, that's the duki who ate with Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, who did not take the money, but took the opportunity to bench, I got news for you. It panned out well for him and his family. So, mishpacha ben gedolei romi v'korin oso mishpachas bar luyanus. Okay, sorry for pronunciation. And this family now still has prominence amongst the Romans. It's so interesting, by the way. This tzeduki, like in terms of his frumkeit, in terms of a religion, like, right, not necessarily, but just by virtue of the fact that he did one significantly good act, giving up all that money and benching, so his family was paid back for generations afterwards. Still a prominent person in Rome. Yes, yes. Right. In terms of money, monetary equivalency, like how much money are we talking about? So I can't talk in dollars and cents, but I can talk in currency current back in the day. One golden coin is equivalent to 25 dinarim, 25 zuzim, same thing. So 10 of those would be 250. So 10 zuhuvim is worth 250 zuzim. That means now if you take the number and you multiply it by 4, which is what Rebbe was ready to pay the tzeduki, so that comes out to 1,000 zuzim. How much is 1,000 zuzim? So again, I'm not talking now in modern currency, but your ksuva that you write for your wife, which is going to give you pause before divorcing her because dinner didn't come out as well as you liked it to. So how much is that incentive for you to think twice before divorcing her? That's 200 zuz. 200 zuz is about, in the time of the Gemara, basically the amount of money that an average person could live on for the year. Okay? A average annual salary, or maybe a median salary for 1 year. So we're talking about 5 times that amount. Okay. That's what I said. It's a significant amount of money that he gave up on. Let's continue in the Gemara. Kisav and Izgala. Amale Rav Achabre, the Revel Rav Ashi, Maishna, Me Hashavas Aveda. How is this any different than the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda? Now, the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, so a person consistently loses things. And every day you know exactly where to pick it up and how to return it to him. Because he leaves it there every single day. And it doesn't matter that you have accomplished the mitzvah every single time you return it to him. And how now is that any different than the mitzvah of Kisav Adam? So the Gemara says, Amalei Hasam Lok Siv Miyuta Achak Siv Miyuta V'Chisa Hu. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what's different. The text of the Torah makes it different. When it comes to the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, the Torah just simply says, Hashev Tashiv. You return it to him. Meaning, regardless of how many times he's lost it, you continuously return it to him. Masha'inkin, when the Torah says V'Chisa, it doesn't just simply say V'Chisa, it says V'Chisa Hu. The who at the end of that word is similar to the word of who in the Torah, which is a miut. It's a limitation. You only need to do it once. Kisar ruach, we're at the end of the of our first sugya of the day. Amar Rabba Bar Chanan, Amar Rav Yochanan Loshanu, Ela Shechazav Nizgala. This is only if it was covered and then subsequently uncovered. Avalo Chazav Nizgala Potam Lechasos. Meaning the way to understand the last line of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah describes how it was, the wind covered it up, and now the Mishnah says, and you're obligated to cover it, but wait 1 second. It's covered. What am I doing? So the proper understanding of the Mishnah is the wind covered it. It then subsequently was uncovered. So now you have an obligation to cover it. So the Gemara says, well, once it's covered, isn't that now what we would refer to as dichui, rejection? So Rav Papa says, okay, that's true. It is dichui. But there's no concept of dichui as it relates to mitzvos. Now the Gemara over here describes a scenario where you're shechting blood onto the ground and there is an obligation to cover, but it's absorbed in the ground. If it's absorbed in the ground, so there's no longer an obligation to cover it. So the Gemara's answer, very simple, is Hasam Kishirishumo Nikar. Now that's talking about a case where it didn't fully absorb into the ground. I could still make trace amount of the blood that's on the surface of the ground, and that's why there's an obligation to cover. This idea that there's no dichui by mitzvahs, it sounds like a familiar idea, doesn't it not? It is. Back in the third parak of Sukkah, we talked about it regarding the hadassim. The hadassim that grew berries on it, once there are too many berries on it, so then it is pasul, you can't use it. But then if I remove the berries, it becomes eligible. And over there, the Gemara, similar discussion, right? Lama Gimel, thereabouts, similar discussion regarding dichui by mitzvahs. And Rapapa, like here, same thing over there, ain dichui, it's a mitzvah, there's no rejection by mitzvahs. Where's the concept of dichui principally apply? Karbanos. By karbanos, we have this concept of dichui, where an animal was qualified, disqualified, requalified. The animal's fine, the mizbech was disqualified. So in other words, there's a concept of dichui. The question becomes, does that principle of dichui extend from karbanos and move into the world of mitzvahs? And Rav Papa, based on a number of mishnayos, ours being one of them, says that there is no dichu as it relates to mitzvos. Damshin is started by mind, we're on the very bottom of the amud. Blood gets mixed in with the water. Im yesh bo mariz dam chayv l'chasos. So as long as it's still, its coloration, its hue is red in nature, so that means then that there's an obligation to cover. It still has the status of blood. It's started by yayin. Now, what if the blood gets mixed in with wine? We have a problem. meaning we would like to know its coloration, but we'll never know because wine and blood have the same color. So what are we going to do? So Rono, so kilu humayim is kilu humayim. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to substitute. Meaning, if this wasn't wine, and if this was water, would there still be enough blood to give a red hue to the solution? And so basically, in order to know all this, you're going to have to know how much blood was there and how much wine was there, and then just play around now in another bottle using the same proportions, the same ratio of blood and water. Okay, so yes, you're going to have to know a lot of information in order to see this through. Kilu mayim nisari b'dama behema. Let's say the dam chai got mixed in with dam behema. It's the same problem. Dam chai is obligated in kisui. Dam behema is not obligated in kisui. And again, because it's the same color, and over here it's basically the same liquid, just halachically different. So what do? O b'dam hachaya, or let's say blood of chai gets mixed in with the blood of chaya, but the second blood it gets mixed in with is simply, it wasn't from a shechted chaya. It just simply was blood. So, ro'ono so ki'ilu hein mayim. So again, the same solution like we said earlier. Basically, we're going to have to sub out the non-kisui blood with water and see if there still is a red tinge, a red hue to the solution. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ein dam mevatel dam. Rabbi Yehuda over here, as his shita is throughout the entirety of Shas, is that min bemino eino batel. There is no nullification when you have a mixture of similar items. So when I have blood getting mixed up with blood, any trace amount of dam chaya still retains its independent identity, and therefore there is going to be a mitzvah of kisui. Dam hanitas v'sha'ala sakim chayav l'chasos. This line of the Mishnah we saw already earlier, saw in the beginning of the parak. If I have blood that splatters, or blood that's on the knife, I have an obligation to cover that blood. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Masab is manchein sham dam elahu, aval yesham dam shalohu patam l'chasos. So Rabbi Yehuda says, that's true, but that's assuming there's no other blood. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda's position is, you don't have to cover all the blood of the chaya, you just simply have to cover a sampling of the blood. If there's other bloods of this chaya to cover, fine. If not, then you will have to basically scrape it off the knife, or scrape it where it got, or take it from where it got splattered elsewhere. Tanan Hasam. We're basically going to be learning the same point. It's the Mishnah back in Zvachim. We saw it back in Zvachim, we saw it back in Menachos, and now we're hearing the trifecta. We're seeing it again here in Chulin. The idea is that when you shecht an animal, so the prince, when you shecht a carbon, so obviously your chief goal is to take some of the blood that comes out with that shechita and do the mitzvah of zrika. Sprinkle that blood onto the mizbeach. That is the act of kapara for a carbon. So basically what happens if that blood were to get mixed in with other liquids? And here we go now. It's the same exact point, but here in the sixth parak of Chulin, we're talking about Kisu Adam, and there, where it's quoted in Zvachim and Menachos, it's talking about the mitzvah of Zrikas Adam. But it's going to be the same point. Tanan Hasam, the Mishnah over there, says, Dam Shinisar B'mayim Yishpa Mar Zdam, Kasher. If, as long as there is a hue of blood, of red blood, it's Kasher. Nisar B'yayin Ro'noso Kilu Humayim. If it gets mixed in with water, if it gets mixed in with red wine, so once again, we're going to have to see the ratio of the blood to wine, sub out the wine with water, and see if there was, in fact, still a red hue. Again, if it gets mixed up with blood of another animal, blood of a chaya, so once again, we're going to have to do the same thing. We're going to have to know the ratio, sub out the blood, the non-zrika blood with water, and see if it still gives a red hue. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ein dam mevatel dam. And Rabbi Yehuda over there, just like over here, says that when it comes to blood getting mixed in with blood, it's min bemino, eino bato. Each blood, all bloods retain their identity, even though the blood for zrika is only but just a small fraction of the entire solution. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan l'shanu ol shenaflu mayim l'soch dam. The idea that when it comes to the mixtures, and as long as it has its coloration, it's going to be okay. That's only in a case where water falls into the blood. But if, let's say, we are dripping blood into water, Rishon, Rishon, Batal. With every drop that goes in, it becomes Batal. And even though over the course of time, right, remember your days of titration back in lab? No, not all of you. But but eventually what's going to happen over the course of time is that the aggregate amount of blood, obviously, is going to obviously turn the color of the water into blood. It's going to turn it red. But it doesn't matter. This concept of kama kama batel is that because with each incremental drop, it subsequently becomes batel, so then it can no longer then resuscitate itself and become significant status-wise vis-a-vis the mitzvah of kisui or the mitzvah of zrika. Amar Rapapa Lenin kisui en okein. Now Rapapa says the same thing is not true regarding kisui. Ein dichui etzel mitzvos. Because when it comes to a mitzvah, we don't reject a mitzvah. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel kol mara ad momios. As long as it is a red hue, mechaprim, umachshirin, v'chayavim bekisui. So basically now we're gonna put together three halachas. Up until now, we basically compare two halachas. The halacha of kisui adam and the halacha of zrika. What we're now going to add to that is also machshirin. Meaning that if we have a solution of blood and water, as long as it has a red hue to it, so it still is blood vis-a-vis the mitzvah of kisui, it's still blood vis-a-vis the mitzvah of mechaper, meaning zrika sadam, and it's also going to be blood vis-a-vis machshirin. Now the Gemara says, wait one second, I didn't understand that last point. So bekisui my kamash malan, I'm sorry, mechaper mechsham v'chayavim bekisui, my kamash malan, mechaperin tanina, chayavim bekisui tanina. So the Gemara says, as far as being mechaper, that's the Mishnah Zvachim that we just learned together. As far as kisui adam, that's our Mishnah that we're learning right now. What did we just learn? What did we just gain with this statement? So the Gemara says, machshirin itzirich lei. So the Gemara says, what we gained is a statement, a chiddush in the world of hechsher. Again, let's remind one another. In order for any food to become tameh, it first has to come into contact with liquid, one of seven liquids. One of those seven liquids is blood. If I have a mixture of water and blood, so as long as it's a red hue, it has the status of blood. Now, yeah, good. So now, at this point in time, you should be wondering to yourself, in fact, David just did. So you should be wondering to yourself, I don't understand. In this solution of water and blood, as far as Heksher is concerned, they're both machshirin. So why do I need it to have the status of blood, even if it doesn't have the status of blood? So it's water. Water is also a machshir. So the Gemara is bothered by that question. So the Gemara says, "Itzrich le machshirin nami idam echshuri machshir imaya echshuri machshire." So the Gemara says, "I'm so confused. Even the solution of blood and water for machshirin, I don't care what status it has. Either one of them would be a machshir. Put together, you don't think it's going to be a machshir? Of course, it's going to be a machshir. So lo tzricha shetamdo bemegishamim. So the Gemara says, well, we're talking about a case where the blood gets mixed in with rainwater. Rainwater megishamim nami kevin to shakil." The Rami Achshavino. So the Gemara says, when you collect rainwater, as long as you're collecting the rainwater, that also serves as a machshir. So we are still confused. Lotzricha shetimdu me'alehem. Sorry, shenitmedu me'alehem. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking about a scenario in which the rainwater organically gets mixed in with the blood. So in other words, rainwater does serve as hechshir, but only after it's collected and you wanted that rainwater. But if you have a natural collection of rain pooled into a little pit where there happens to be blood over there, so that rainwater by itself has not been collected for its purposes, therefore the rainwater in of itself is not a machshir. The blood is a machshir. So now, when I have this mixture of blood and naturally collected rainwater, where the rainwater is not a machshir, so now we can have the discussion of, if it has a red hue, it has the status of blood, it can then serve as a machshir, but if it does not have a red hue, so then it is not going to be, it's only rainwater, and the rainwater was uncollected, so then it's not going to be a machshir. This will be our point of pause for this morning. We did three basic subjects this morning. One, the requirement of how many kisum do you need to do for multiple shechitas, and a really interesting discussion in the Gemara, that according to Rav Yehuda, where you have to stop in the middle for kisui, is that serving as a hefsek for your bracha on shechita? And the Gemara is arguing is no. How is it different than the case of Talmidei de Rav? So that is one sugya. Our second sugya we did is the principal obligation of kisui is on the shochet. Somebody comes in and intercepts, so he now is fined Yud Zehuvim, and a discussion in the Gemara regarding whether the Yud Zehuvim is on the mitzvah or is on the bracha, being a nafkamin for benching, and a phenomenal story regarding the tzeduki and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And our third sugya of what happens when blood gets mixed in with water, and basically when do we look at that solution as blood, and when do we look at it as not blood, and quite frankly, it's just simply predicated on coloration and hue. And then a discussion where we have these halachas in Kisui Adam, in Zrikas Adam, and also in Machshir. Limited, but we also have it in Machshir as well.